Good evening, everyone, and welcome to, this is actually the building of Torat Yosef, in which we have Beit Midrash. There's a learning program here called Tzilo Shel Echav, otherwise translated as In the Shadow of the Beit HaMikdash. Tzilo Shel Echav, In the Shadows of the Beit HaMikdash. And I want to tell you a little bit about this place before we start our evening, but beforehand, I think that we should recognize. We should recognize the unique and special opportunity that every person over here has. You're coming to Machon Meir. If you. So when the old city came back into our hands, we had a population of under 3,000 Jews here. There were about 800 families, Jewish families here. There were about 8,000 Muslim families here.
How many?
8,000. About 800.
Oh.
And there were another about 1,000 Christian Armenian families. So you had the Christian, Jewish, and Muslim quarter. And we were the smallest. And it became very dangerous to be here. The Arabs would consistently stab people here. And this went on until not so long ago, approximately 18 years ago. Ariel Sharon, who was in the Knesset at the time, bought a house here, meaning he legally got ownership of a house here, and by legally acquiring ownership of a house here, his security detail was forced to be here. And that changed the situation in the Old City. Meaning when you had a security detail for a Knesset member, suddenly they had to have serious security out here. So then the Jewish quarter became a much more secure place. And the morning after the Old City returned into our hands, so Rav Avigdor Nevenzal, who was learning at the time at the Mir, and was married to the Rosh Yeshiva of the Mir's niece, and it was very obvious in the yeshiva that he was supposed to be the next Rosh Yeshiva, the next head of the Yeshiva Mir, a very big and famous yeshiva out in Master Arim. The morning after Jerusalem is in our hands, he doesn't show up to yeshiva. For the next few days, his chavrusa, his learning partner, sees that he's just not coming. So he asks people, "Where's my chavrusa?" And they told him, "We hear that he's by the old city." So he came out here, and I'm going to show you a little enclave in the wall. He came into a little enclave in the wall, brought his sfarim, and started learning here. Right here. Across the street, I'm going to show you a little ways up. There's this little enclave in the wall. 50 years ago, he came. There was no yeshiva here. There was nothing here. There were a small number of Jewish families, a huge number of Muslim families, terror attacks on an almost daily basis, and he brought his farm, and he sat and started learning here. Nothing was doing here. So his chavrusa came from Mir, and he said, "What are you doing?" So he said, "The halacha says, anyone who wants to go to Jerusalem is entitled. And if a husband tells his wife, 'I want to go to Jerusalem,' then he has the right, he's making the right claim. Well, I belong here. The Beit HaMikdash is right here by this wall. You want to continue learning, you come here. I'm not walking back into Mir." And with that, he left the yeshiva, which he was supposed to be Rosh Yeshiva, and he started learning here. And what happened was, he became known as the rabbi of the old city, because he came here every day. There was no yeshiva at the time. When he was here, so then Yeshivat HaKotel, which we will visit at the end of tonight, they started realizing, hey, we can actually have a yeshiva here, because they had the big Rav Nevenzel here. The Jews in the quarter had a rabbi who was their rabbi. It became a natural thing that he became the rabbi of the old city. He didn't even have a house here. Now his father was commissioner of the government. And his father bought, and he had a contract with the government, that he had the plot of land just to the right of this yeshiva, and he had the rights to build an apartment building over there. He bought those rights. So slowly he built it. After a number of years, there's a house for the Nevenzel family here, right next to the yeshiva. And the contract says that no one's allowed to build a house closer than Rav Nevenzel's house to the Kotel. His house is supposed to be, by agreement with the government, the closest house to the Beit HaMikdash. Well, one day, Shas gets into the government, and they look out the window, and they see tractors starting to build this huge complex, which we're in right now. And they came, at that point, Rav Nemtzel's father had passed away, and he inherited the apartment, and the building, much of the building is their family still. And they came to Rav Nemtzel, and Rav Nemtzel went to the heads of the yeshiva and said, you know, I have an agreement with the government that my house is supposed to be closest. You can build behind my house. You can't block. He had a balcony. Everything was straight onto the Kotel. So they said, yeah, but we got around the deal. We made our own deal. So he didn't make a fight over it. So people came to him and they said, you're losing. Your property was worth millions. Now there's going to be a building closer than you to the Kotel. So he said, when I look, this is Rav Nevenzal's line. He said, I'm not taking them to court and I'm not fighting. Because when I look out my window and I look at the Kotel, I see a Beis Mikdash that's still destroyed. And if there'll be a yeshiva here, then there'll be a Beis Mikdash that's alive. And you don't fight people who want to build a living Beis Mikdash because you want a better view of the Beis Mikdash that's not yet there. Now just so you understand who Rav Nevenzal is. Rav Nevenzal is a person who I attend his Siyum Shas twice a year. Twice a year he finishes Shas. Okay? We'll see how many volumes that is. That's twice a year he finishes all of Shas. I go to the Siyum. I mean, they do the Siyum here. Until this year I went to the Siyum. You're talking about a person that I saw him come on the bus, so I quickly ran and grabbed the seat where there was an empty seat next to me. He sat down next to me. There went his learning for the rest of the bus ride. I started asking him. Every question I asked him, he'd say, let's review. And he'd start reviewing by heart the whole page in Shas that I asked him the question from. I asked the question and he says, let's review the page before he answers me. And he starts rattling off the page by heart. He's going over, okay, so first thing my answer, second thing my answer said. Now your question is, and then he analyzes my question with me and then he answers me. So that's, Rav Nevenzal, it was always hard for me to ask him questions. I've been asking him questions for over 20 years, but the difficulty is that before I finish asking the question, he's already answering it. He's so fast. So Rav Nevenzal, every night, before he leaves, he would leave the Beis Medrash, would look out the window at the Beit HaMikdash and start crying. The students who waited till midnight would stand there to see the tears going down his eyes. So that means one of my hardships after being here 3 years is you see the Kotel every day. It's a little hard to get excited anymore. You know, I see it every day. I'm used to it. No. He would, every day. And this person who cries over the Beit HaMikdash every day was the one who said, I'm not fighting Porat Yosef. I'm not making a fight. They want to build a yeshiva there. Better there be a live yeshiva there. 40 years passed. And this yeshiva has had these rooms empty. Three huge Batei Midrash. The one down here. The one above us. And the one above that has people learning in it. But there are three floors here. Each one is big enough to house 700 students. And once upon a time, this was a vibrant Beis Medrash. They have another three. So Rav Nevenzal looks out his window. He had said, I'm giving up my rights to see the Beit HaMikdash, so there should be a living Torah here. And he sees this place empty. And the floor above it empty. For the last 20 some odd years, this place has been empty. Dead, nothing. Because the donors who own this place say, make it available so that when we make our bar mitzvahs at the Kotel, we come here and make our events. And they can hold on to those rights. And then Rav Nevenzal started seeing something problematic here. One day when I was leaving the Kol Elir, I'm on my way to learn with you guys at Machon Meir. There's a policeman on the street. I'm walking up the street and he says, stop. Excuse me, what did I do? So he says, you know what you're doing, and stop. So I stop. And he starts yelling at me. I said, what are you yelling? What did I do? I'm standing on a public street. He says, no, you're not. You're making problems. Leave. I said, I got to go that way. What do you mean leave? He said, stop making believe you don't know. I want you to leave now. I said, but why are you telling me to leave this street? We're talking about the street right out here that goes up to the parking lot. So he says to me, if you don't leave, I'm giving you a ticket. And then I saw it. As he's arguing with me, a procession is coming. There's a priest holding this huge cross, and they have incense burning, and he has maybe 100, 200 people walking after him. And what's happening here in the old city in the last 15, 20 years is that the church is slowly moving and conquering areas. Conquering, like conquering the public street, they get a license to take over the street for this hour, the next hour, and they start having processions here, and they increase their frequency. Meaning if once upon a time they would do it once a year, then they went up to 10 times a year. Then they went up to 3, 4, 5 times a month. Now it's becoming a regular thing that they could burn incense out here. You could be walking the streets and what you're smelling is not the incense of the Beit HaMikdash, you're smelling the incense of the church. They took over Kever David. Suddenly Kever David is a place where they have their worship going on over there. And Rav Neventhal, who has the official title of the Rabbi of the Old City, started seeing that what's happening here is that the church is slowly taking over territories legally by purchasing them, building sites for missionaries to work within the Old City. At the same time, the Muslims are doing the exact same thing. The Muslims, if we said there were 800 Jewish families, how many do you think there are now? Under 4,000, approximately 3,800 Jewish families own in the Old Quarter. How many Muslims do you think are here? Close to 50,000 families. Look at where they went in numbers, look at where we went in numbers.
I thought that non-Jews are not allowed to buy property in the Jewish Quarter.
I'm not talking about our quarter, but I'm saying it's called quarters. It's not exactly quarters. We're going to look out the window and see. And what they have been doing is that they continuously build illegally. They're living, it's become a slum. It's one huge slum. You could barely drive through the Arab quarter. But they keep growing and growing and growing in numbers. Now, Rav Neventhal saw how they keep taking territory away. So he went to Rav Chaim Kanievsky, one of the big Talmidei Chachamim who lives in Bnei Brak. He went to Rav Chaim Kanievsky and said to him, what am I supposed to do? How can I fight this? People are calling him and saying, Rabbi, my kids go out to the porch to play and they see from our roof, next door, the church roof, they're doing Avodah Zarah, burning incense, doing church activity, and this is what my kids see every day. How am I supposed to raise my kids this way? People in the Old City were calling him with this question. So he called Rav Chaim Kanievsky and said, what am I supposed to do? And Rav Chaim Kanievsky said to him, build a kollel. He said, what do you mean build a kollel? He said, the only way to make this city what it should be is fill the city with Torah. You have to fill the city with Torah, bring 1,000 students to learn in the Old City. So Rav Neventhal said, I'm not a fundraiser, I have no money. Where am I going to get money for 1,000 students to come learn? So Rav Chaim Kanievsky said, start, it'll work. So his son, who was a top teacher over here in Netiv Aryeh, every Shabbos he had over 30 students over in his house. His son left his position as teacher in Netiv Aryeh and started this kollel. And this kollel rapidly went from 100 to 200 to 300. I joined it. When I joined it, when it opened its doors over here 3 years ago, they just opened their doors, they had over 300 students. That same year, married students, that same year, they hit 700 and then they hit 1,000. So they hit the 1,000 and then they took the lower floor and the upper floor and they had 1,000 students learning here. The next year, second year of the kollel, the second intifada broke out. We started having stabbings here almost every week. I remember a parent called me up. I was coming into the Old City. I was coming here. The guy sitting down the bench from me was coming. He was at Jaffa Gate. He stood at the corner and an Arab turns to him and says, can I have a cigarette? He was smoking. So he told the Arab, okay. Now, Halacha says that just like you give charity to Jewish poor, you give to non-Jewish poor. So the Arab asked him, and he said, okay. He took a cigarette out of his pocket, he gave it to the Arab. He turns around, and he's watching the light. He hears yelling behind him. He turns around, and he sees the Arab who's smoking the cigarette he just gave him, drew a knife, and he's stabbing people. So he looks, and before he can react, the Arab turns and faces him with the knife, a bloody knife. So he looks the Arab in the eye and says to him, you piece of garbage, I just gave you a cigarette, you're going to stab me? The Arab goes, you're right, and turns around and starts stabbing other people. This is the guy who sits down the bench for me. The guy who sat 2 benches in front of me still hasn't made it back to Yeshiva. He was stabbed. He was stabbed at the Jaffa Gate. I don't know if you guys remember, there was a story where right at the Jaffa Gate, there were 2 Yeshiva students stabbed, one from Eshet Torah, who passed away from his wounds. So the other one was a student from here. So we, the students here, we're walking the streets here. Now, think for a second what the numbers were. If the numbers of students, the numbers of families in the Old City, you have 4,000 approximately. So if you have 4,000 Jews and you added 1,000 by building this kollel here, what'd you just do? You added 25% to the number of the Jews in the Old City. So what Rav Nevin Tzal did changed the whole old city. What he did was, he went to all the old shuls. You have in the old city many shuls that were on the verge of closing down. Ramban shul had nothing going on. Became a tourist site. You have in the old city, the Churva. Nothing going on there. It's a tourist site. A shul's supposed to be a tourist site. Shul's supposed to be a place of Torah. And what he did was he took all the shuls in the old city and he sent students. He filled the shuls. So that now the old city became a place that was vibrant. Now, if we go up to the old city, any time of day, any time of night, except for towards the end of Elul, Slichot, look at the people around you. How many of them are Jewish? 1 out of 4? 1 out of 10? The old city has become a tourist site. We're like the Eiffel Tower. We're like the Statue of Liberty. But we're not. This is the holiest place in the world. This is not a tourist site. This is the place of the Ribbono Shel Olam. We're standing in God's house. We're in the holiest place in the world. There should be a law that says you want to enter Jerusalem, Jaffa Gate, put on a yarmulke. You want to enter Jaffa Gate, you have to say, I'm willing to accept the 7 Noachide laws. Otherwise, what are you doing here? How could you walk onto here with a cross? What's going on? This is God's city. Wait, it's not my city. I'm a guest here. So you're taking the holiest city, and now it's become like Madison Square Garden. But it's not Madison Square Garden. This isn't a tourist site. This is the holiest place on earth. And we have the merit to be here. And what Rav Nevin Tzal wanted to do by building this yeshiva, he actually fulfilled the dream that he wanted. When he said, I'm going to let a live base medrash happen here, he didn't know it would end up being his base medrash. And that's what ended up happening now. This Beit Midrash now learns here, and the approach here is that anyone that wants to come learn, if they're sincere, they'll accept them. They have rules, meaning you can't talk on a cell phone. Your cell phone has to be off throughout the time that you're learning. There are rules, so you can't interfere with other people's learning. But they don't test you on your level of knowledge. If you want to come learn, if you're sincere, you could come. So people who can't get accepted anywhere else can get accepted here. And people who were not given a chance anywhere grew here. You have many, many people who came to this place, and they were like, you know, not so serious. And by the time they left, they're already very serious, and they've learned a tremendous amount. And that's the Rav Nevin Tzal's approach. You guys, now I can tell you a few things off the record that not so many people know.